Don't touch that dial. Stay a while and listen to the great things that God is doing in the world today. Come fly with Global Air Force. And here's your host, Jim Rohn.
So today we have with us Lauren Widrick. And Lauren Widrick is a pastor with his wife, Dixie. They have a church that's up by the St. Lawrence Waterway, North Jefferson Christian Fellowship in New York. And my attention was drawn to a book that Lauren recently wrote. It's called Trapped Between Two Worlds. And he said it's uncovering the reality of the world beyond your physical existence. Lauren, I'm glad you're here today. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's good to be able to talk today.
Okay, that book, Trapped Between Two Worlds. So you were in two worlds at one time.
Yes, at least that's what it felt like to me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Your daughter, Carissa, saw a vision, and in a vision that actually I think was the start of the conflict you had between these two worlds where a demon actually attacked you somehow. What would you say about that?
Yes, actually, and the reality of this, when I first came up back awake after 23 days, I told my wife that I did not know anymore what really happened and what might be considered vision or out of body, because where I was seemed more real than the physical world I live in, like right now talking to you. This experience I'm having right here as I sit in the room seems less real to me than what I experienced during those days. And I was in a surgical recovery. My daughter had seen some kind of a dark being. What she said was stab me came in with a knife, stab at me. And I wrestled it away from him and he disappeared. What happened in the physical side of the equation is I was sitting up the day after surgery and the dural sac contains my spine burst and spinal fluid quickly leaked out. My brain sunk and I had a series of brain bleeds that should have been either death or long-term brain damage for me. There is no real recovery from that. Typically, when you have a brain bleed, blood pools in parts of the brain, and then the tissue dies. And in my case, the bleeds happened, and when they got the dural sac repaired, my brain refloated where it should be, and there was no pooling blood or anything and no damaged tissue at all.
Mm.
When I awoke, I had a few minor, probably from when they showed me the MRIs from where the pressure had been on my brain was in the balance, eyesight, hearing, and also memory areas. And when I awoke, my memory was pretty well intact, but my balance wasn't real perfect. I couldn't hear or see very good, but over the course of about 10 days, that all returned to me pretty well. And what she saw, I believe, was the same being that I wrote about that was my primary captor, if you will, in the first three chapters of the second part of the book, which talks about the darker places I went or where I was held captive. And those beings actually, in that case, I don't know how versed folks are, but I believe they were actually fallen angels, not the demonic, as we understand it. In other words, they're not disembodied spirits, but they're actual fallen angels that I was experiencing in that place. So I'm not understanding in my own heart what it was that Carissa saw, whether it was that fallen angel or whether it was a demon, I don't know. I just know that the tear that I experienced, according to the doctors, never happens after surgery. It's always during, and they repair it on the spot and they make you lay still for 48 hours. Everything's good. In my case, since it happened while I was sitting up, the fluid leakage caused my brain to sink and then all the issues that happened afterwards. The interesting thing is when I went unconscious, I literally woke up in a frozen river, and it reminded me actually of the St. Lawrence, same color, same depth. If anybody's ever seen a very dark blue, and it was fast moving, and the water was probably somewhere around 35 degrees, just above freezing, to the point where it burned my skin. And I was there for a period of time, and then there were two other places where I was. I don't know. I think they were second heaven. That's my belief. Meaning they were the place between the heaven that God lives in and the earth that we live in, where angels and demons war. That's where I think I was. Then after this, after I exited or was rescued or released from those places, I actually spent time in the golden city, the throne room, and I had two or three experiences there where God was actually repairing my inner person, my mind, and all that. And the book writes, it basically breaks out chapters based on each of the places that I went and explains what I experienced in those places.
Well, I'm a researcher, so I dig into this and I turn the pages and I try to read between the lines. And, of course, we can always learn something new. You said they're fallen angels and not demons. Can you explain any more of that?
Yeah, this is researchable, so you can look it up and make your own judgments on it. Anybody can. There's a particular ministry we're familiar with named Perry Stone, and he talks about it in depth and studies it out historically. But in essence, I'll say it's theory, but I believe it's true. There are fallen angels, which we're aware of, and then there's also demons. Many people do not make a distinction. The demonic, it is believed, comes from a cross between fallen angels and women, which happened in the book of Genesis chapter 6 and actually caused flood. It was actually about getting rid of an impure crossing of beings, and that's why God acted as he did during Noah's time. It wasn't just that they were acting harsh or mean as compared to today. In other words, they weren't more evil or nastier then than they are now. God had a problem where mankind's genetic pool, if you will, was being soiled by angelic seed. And the offspring were actually physical beings that were larger in stature than human beings. And when they died, their spirits are what we believe, or what I believe, the demonic. Body spirits. That's what Jesus used to kick out of people as an example when he walked on the earth. He would cast out a demon. Well, what was that demon? It wasn't a fallen angel. It was one of these beings that is the leftover spirit or the spirit-soul combination of what had been a living being back in Genesis 6.
Mm-hmm.
The logic behind this, too, I would just say this, too. This will make more sense. A human being dies and their spirit either goes to heaven or Hades. And of course, angels are all in heaven, the holy angels. And when a cross between an angel and a human might die, where was their spirit go? Because they're not part of God's original plan in the first place. So they remain here, is the theory.
Mm.
And they remain here, which is the theory. And Jesus actually said that when an evil spirit is cast out of somebody or is no longer has a body to be in, it roams around in dry places looking for another home, which I always find fascinating. Angels are not doing that. They're at home in whom they are, how they were created. They either fell or they didn't. So in essence, that's the thinking behind it. And what I was contending with in that place, in that second heaven, we're angelic, not demonic.
Mm-hmm. Oh boy, I got to explore that avenue. I'm right along with you. Okay, good. And you brought up about a change in the DNA in that. And of course, I'm a researcher and I study genetics and DNA. So I see all that. You know, you see where our genetics has changed as man has fallen. Okay, good. That was a key point. When I hit that, you know, I've been combing those pages for a while. Now, another thing you said, I'd like the people that are listening today, I'd like to get a picture of some of the things. Here you said you were in this water, frozen water, and you saw these fallen angels, and you looked over on the shore, and they were like people, and there were... Can you tell us about that? I want to get that picture again. Let's paint that picture again. Here you are in the water.
I actually went unconscious in that room, and immediately, as soon as I shut my eyes, I woke up in that river. And I remember laying there, and I was on my back in some kind of an apparatus that held me just below the surface of the water with my face above so that I could breathe. The lights were all muted. Everything was gray. I could look right directly at the sun. It wasn't covered like it was dim like an overcast day, but there were no clouds in the sky. So basically, it looked like you might put a photo filter in front of it so it's all able to be stared at. I could look right at the sun, and it didn't hurt my eyes a bit, and I thought that was kind of strange. And then I heard voices and looked over to my right, where I heard them coming from, and it was the bank of the river, and there was like an office space over there, at least the foundation of it, and people doing work in that space. And then just beyond them were tall, discolored, dark beings that would act, and then they would say something, or they'd make a command, or they'd do something, and the people that were in the building that I saw would mimic what they had just done in the other place. And I watched that for a while, and I, again, trying to draw a conclusion, and the only thing I could figure out is whatever's happening with those large discolored beings, I believe they were fallen angels, was being reflected in the people standing and working in that building. And then one of the angels flew over to me and explained that I was captured and being held here and going to serve their purposes, and there was no way out.
The reality of what she saw, and be very helpful in that sense. You said that the angel was saying that where he was a place of commerce. And I know they use it in some translations of the Bible. There's a lot of commerce, and you were on this river with all these boats going up and down. What do you mean by this is a place of commerce?
The conclusion I drew when he said that is this is a place where they do commerce that somehow fortifies and funds their operation against God. Now, I don't understand that, but it reminded me of if the earth is mirrored after the heavens, it wouldn't be odd that there was some form of commerce in the heavens. And of course, by association, then a fallen heaven would also have some type of commerce happening, whether it's all twisted in the fallen world, but it's a mirror or an outflow of what's really happening. And my point is this: here on the earth, there's seed time and harvest, there's work, and I believe even in the Garden of Eden, you know, he tended the garden. So even in the original creation, there were things people did, Adam in this case, to make it a better place, to take care of things, to farm it. And not odd to me, heaven, that's a mirror of heaven. In other words, there's some type of activity happening in heaven, I believe, commerce and otherwise. Same thing in the fallen realm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, another thing that I wonder, and I have a couple more things, in the visions and many people's visions and angelic experience, the angels use swords and spears and ride horses, and yet we're in a modern world, and you're in the river, and while you were in this river, you looked and you saw the people answering phones and working computers. This is something I'd like to get a better understanding.
It seemed to me that both, it's almost like it's superimposed. There is no time, as I understand it, in those places. So you might see, as an example, the angels might have a shield laying next to them on the ground that they would use for warfare. And right at the same time, there'd be somebody nearby on a telephone or tapping on a computer. Both are present at the same time, which seems odd as I talk about it. Seemed odd at the moment, but again, I'm just writing what I saw. In that place, the activities that they were pursuing had both violence. There's some gambling that went on in that same place. They did have robes. The angels had robes. I've thought about it afterwards too. They had leather, and this is not in the book, but you know, the angel that hovered over the water was close enough I could see it. He had like a very tight fitting leather shoe on, covered his whole foot. No rubber sole or anything like I'm used to seeing. It's just like it was entirely made of leather, sewn leather tied around his ankle. And I don't know whether that's past, present, or I've never seen anything quite like it. And their robes were gray or brown. They were tattered, like they'd seen a lot of activity, whether they'd been in battles or had just lived or worn them a long time. They showed wear and tear, and I couldn't tell what kind of cloth they were made out of by looking at them. You know, they reminded me of anything anybody might wear, as far as a robe is concerned.
I know people that have told and friends that have had angelic visions. They talk about the garments and their belts, and that's interesting. you know, it's not all just preaching and preaching out of the Bible to get some of these things that get us turned on to the reality of God and an evil world, a good world, a heaven and a hell, and a place in between is where you look like looks like you were. I noticed one thing you said, that they were gambling. Now, why don't we go over there? You next thing out of the river, you went to a place in New York that you recognize, Pulaski. Yeah. So here you wind up, you get out of the river, you're still all bound up. In your book, you talk about having like a vest on, still got that on. But then you woke up in a place in Pulaski, New York. What is going on here?
In the experience I had, because I woke up in a room with a big picture window, and I say window, you know, big, like, oh goodness, 10 foot wide, not quite floor to ceiling. I could see outside, and it was wintertime, snow, you know, gray, all that, but warm inside, and I'm in a reclining position, same kind of contraption like I was in the river, only I'm not in water now, it's dry. I'm still wired up to it, I'm still in a vest, and I still can't get things undone. My hands aren't working right, and there didn't seem like there was any way for me to break free of this, and that was when the same being that had been by the river that had spoken to me came to me there and spoke. And in this place, it was more like a twisted place where the world system, and what I mean by that is political system, you know, people telling the truth or lying for position, all that sort of thing was happening at a very multiplied way there. And I could not get out. There was also a restaurant in the next room over where they were serving food to many different patrons, and it was all smelled rotten, really awful.
Yeah, you said it smelled like burnt, rotten pork.
Yep, it was all ham-based. Of course, that makes no sense. I've thought about this. My mind was trying to make sense of what's going on around me, but there was no eating going on in the room. I was in the neuro ICU. Immediately after what happened to me, there was no food. Everything filtered in that place. They only let two people at a time in the room, even much less eat anything. So whatever I was smelling had to have been part of this experience. You know, was what it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea of pork.
Now, you were talking about them gambling, and you said gambling was one. Is that one thing that you see as really evil?
Basically, one, for enjoyment, but two, if you could gain enough income from the gambling, you could leave.
You got involved with that?
Yes, I did. I believed them that if I did that, I could get out of it, so I started doing that. But as I did it, I felt like I was becoming like them.
You felt like you were not gaining ground, huh?
Right. I felt like I was going backwards, and I actually was having some success, but as far as gaining income, but I felt like inside I was, with every gain, I felt like I was becoming more like my captors if I continued much longer.
So, okay, you're saying you could buy your way out of there?
That was what I was told, that you gambled and got enough income, you could purchase your freedom and leave the place.
Well, did you ever see anybody do that there?
No, I didn't. They just told me that you could. And a couple people said that they'd seen somebody do it. I didn't see anybody leave while I was there. I did see the next place I went to, I saw people die in that place. And then eventually I saw somebody get out, which is what encouraged me that there was hope.
That's the big thing about hell. There's no hope. Well, the next place, and I don't want to give all your book away because people have to read the book. We're talking about it. I'm trying to get some deeper insight, and I want to equate the reality of what's going on in this book. There is a reality that I believe that Lauren is trying to tell you, and I believe that God would want you to know. There's something in there that God wants you to know, let you know that there is a world where evil goes on. There's another world besides just the one we see right now.
A thought with that. And this is not something I said to anybody other than my publisher. I've always wanted to write, and I always thought I'd write maybe something more like a novel or maybe a commentary on things I have interest in or history. when I came out of this surgery and was getting better, I started to write, and I was thinking about what to write about, and the Lord really strongly dealt with me in my conscience. He said, you must, I remember just very clearly, an inner voice said, you've got to write about that experience. And I didn't even like to think about it. I hadn't talked to my wife a whole lot about it or other people because it just, parts of it were so traumatic, I'd rather forget it even happened. And the Lord used these words. He said, you've got to write something. He said, the reason you had the experience was so that you could write about something people have not seen instead of just another version of what they have seen.
You're saying what I expected to hear. Go on.
So he dealt kind of strongly with me, especially the second half of the book, which speaks to heaven. And I don't know if that's just my own personal preference, you know, because the first part was very hard to write because I felt like I had to relive what I went through, and it was a tortured experience. The second half was kind of the sort of experience you'd never want to leave. And the Lord's comment to me, or what he just said, was you need to give people something they haven't seen that will encourage them. In the case of what went on in heaven, I've actually had numerous conversations with relatives and friends that have really made them happy about with regards to people that have passed before or the reality of that place and just how good it is. You know, you'll hear people talk about in heaven how, you know, that they can't understand how they'd ever be happy there because somebody might not be there or they might go before a family member. And I can just assure you when you're there, it doesn't even cross your mind. That's how good it is. And it's not selfish. It's not like you don't care about anybody, because I appealed to God two or three times to come back. And I believed I needed to be here for my wife and for others that I know here. And he was very reassuring. When I first went there, I was actually facing away from him. And I was almost ready to turn. And he said, stop. He said, if you turn and look at me, you're never going to want to leave.
Oh, my.
You'll never want to leave this place. So I did not. I could see the light coming off of him out of the corner of my eye, but I never did turn to him for that reason, because I really was hoping to come back and live here again. And again, that was a hard choice, because it's very enticing to no longer have to deal with the troubles we face here in the earth when you have a choice in front of you. And the good news was, I guess it wasn't my choice. You know, he told me that whether I wanted to come back or not didn't really matter anymore here. It depended now on those that were praying for me, that it was up to my wife and family and the church family whether I would return or not.
That was important. In fact, that's what drew you back.
It is.
Yes. So, and now that you're back, you can relate what you experienced. And I want to comment. I have a friend that went to hell, and he didn't tell anybody for a year. He just was terror. He was just terrorized, screamed in terror. And for a year, he couldn't tell anybody. And then he began telling people. And I think this is relative to you. As he began to tell and go back in the experience, he was able to see more, understand more, actually become maybe more didactic, teach on it, think about it, compare it with Scripture.
Yeah.
And I believe that's what's going to happen to you, too. I believe it. But as the time goes on, you'll get a handle on it and be able to continue sharing it. And as you said in your message to me, you want to be a blessing to people. Well, just your experience that you can share it with us, and we can sense what you're saying, that we can sense the truth in it. This is a blessing. And to those that are not believers, they can see that there is another world beyond just what we watch on television and in movies, okay?
I think, to just, maybe this is just my heart, I think sometimes people don't want to be believers because they've been deceived. And I guess maybe some of my experiences, like the gambling in the house that I was in, people don't believe that there's any fun or any joy to be had in serving Jesus. They think that the only joy is to do selfish things, you know, who knows, trying to make lots of money or party or whatever folks do. And I sensed God saying to me through those darker experiences just how hopeless those situations are if they're pursued. There's nothing good about them in the end. You know, I mean, and yes, I suppose you could say you don't serve anybody else. Maybe that's the only benefit I get to be my own master, at least for a while. But it never really ends that way. And when I experienced the heavenly places, it wasn't like I was not under any kind of guard, totally free. I could ask any questions I want. I could enjoy the surroundings.
So you could ask questions while you were in heaven, and God would willingly answer them. What an experience.
So, you know, what am I trying to say? Well, I really think being a believer is a whole lot more fun than being an unbeliever. And I know that may offend some people, but that's just the truth. So anyway.
Excellent. Wonderful. Wonderful. I like it. Wonderful. Thank you. I think we've had a wonderful time here. Thank you for coming in today, Lauren. Lauren B. Widrick has written a book, Trapped Between Two Worlds, where he experienced being trapped in a world where between heaven and hell. But I believe in his experience, and I believe it's a gift from God. So I thank once again Lauren, Pastor Lauren B. Widrick, that's written this book, Trapped Between Two Worlds.
Wants you. Be a part of the Global Air Force Radio Ministry. Please go to our website at www.globalairforce.net. That's www.globalairforce.net.
Well, my friend, if our program has been a blessing to you today and God has touched your heart, your mind, or your body, take some time and write a note to us.
I'd like to hear from you. You can write to me at Jim Rome, Post Office Box 234, Duquesne, Pennsylvania, 15110. Once again, our mailing address is Post Office Box 234, Duquesne, Pennsylvania, 15110. That's all for today. God bless.
Thank you for flying with Global Air Force.